There are sometimes moments in our lives when the light falls through the trees just so, or there is a reflection in the water and you suddenly notice just how amazingly beautiful it is, or moments like the one we just shared together, listening to Arnold sing Thankful. So deeply beautiful and heartfelt that it touches a deep place in us, and our outlook on the world changes, our thoughts, our feelings about ourselves change, and we're transformed from one state of being into another. This is the power of art. This is the power of beauty. It speaks to us in ways that can bypass the roots and the stories that we carry around from day to day. Art and beauty can open our hearts when they're closed, can enlarge our minds when we are tight and small. Art and beauty can be the moisture we need to soften the hard parts, the rigid parts of our beings. Ah, and how we need it. Thank you. And again, thank you. You know, how easy is it to feel gratitude when our hearts are open? Open and flowing. It's our natural human response to say thank you. But what about when we're in crisis? When our worlds are filled with pain or fear or confusion, how do we find gratitude then? I received an email from a friend recently that I'd like to share. She was assigned a poem by Rainier Maria Rilke to study and to respond to for a class that she was taking. So I'll start by reading the poem and then I'll read the response that she sent me. Why, then, have to be human? Oh, not because happiness exists, nor out of curiosity, but because being here means so much. Because everything here vanishes so quickly, seems to need us, and strangely keeps calling to us to have been here once, to have been at one with the earth, is beyond undoing. And this was her response. Dear Mr. Rilke, this is the first poem of yours that I've read that I don't like. Oh, I know it's me and not you. But how would you feel in a craziest election year with the sea rising, with drought, storms, war, floods, and hell looming on the horizon? Yes, and your feet hurt too. Yes, we are needed. And there's not much we can do except brush our teeth and try not to be so afraid that we can't feel love for our dog or friend or family. And yes, all those trees and leaves, water and animals we can never, never, never unlove. Mr. Rilke, please write another poem. Could you write another poem about your take on trampling the earth we love? This is the same earth with which you felt at one. In my oneness, there is a breach. Fear is the wedge. I think this earth that called to you is not beyond undoing. We humans are many and mighty. A dire and careless time is now. And yet I do care in the same way you have cared. Why then have to be human, you ask? I'm glad you can't know what we humans in our great numbers and with our tricky brains are doing. Mr. Rilke, I am sometimes sad that we are humans instead of rocks. It's hard to be human sometime. I know it is for me. When your world is crumbling and your feet hurt. Now, it was another Unitarian that wrote those words. an American, as you can tell from the reference to the election at the beginning, but in all other ways, like us. An aware person living in a world that is thick with tensions and problems aplenty, earth problems, social problems, personal problems. I hazard to suggest that each one of us in this room is affected by one or more of those problems. The writer challenges the sort of fatalistic optimism of the poet. And she says it just ain't that easy to be grateful for life in the times in which we live. This morning, I am curious about that journey from suffering to gratitude. From despair, from resistance, from anger, from frustration, to a place where the heart can open and movement forward is possible. Or at least to a place where we can learn and grow with gratitude and even reverence. To do this, I'm going to return to that story of Jonah and the whale and look a little deeper at the journey that he takes. As I said to the children earlier, this story can be found in the sacred texts of three world religions: the Torah, the New Testament, and the Quran, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. So it would seem, or point to the fact, that this situation that Jonah gets into is a familiar human predicament. Getting stuck in your life. Getting stuck in your life, being angry, frustrated about being stuck, is a common experience. And I imagine each one of us knows something about that, or at the very least has witnessed somebody else being stuck in a place that they did not want to be. So the story begins with God giving Jonah a task to do and direction to follow, a calling, if you will. Jonah responds by saying, "No way," and runs away. As I said, he runs and runs and runs until he gets to the shore, and there he discovers that there's a boat going in the opposite direction than the town of Nineveh, which is where God wanted him to go. Now, I think at that moment he's probably feeling a little gratitude in the discovery that there's a boat there, ready to sail. Well, at least maybe a little relief, because now he's getting away from that thing that he is afraid of. Then on the boat, the storm comes up, and it gets to be a really, really, really ugly storm, and everyone's life is at risk. And everyone in the boat looks to Jonah, and he knows that they know that it's his situation that is making life dangerous for them. The storm, of course, is the storm inside of him. It is the storm that builds up inside all of us when we're fighting against something. Perhaps we're not listening to our own inner wisdom or guidance. Perhaps it is that inner struggle of resisting our emotional life. Perhaps we need to release some fear or some grief. In Jonah's case, the storm came up from his inner struggle with who he was and the direction in life that he was being called to take. He was flat out refusing to take responsibility for it. No one is feeling any gratitude in this part of the story. The other people on board, not wanting to drown, reluctantly but with a heavy dose of survival instinct, decide that they must take responsibility for their own survival and chuck Jonah over the side of the boat. The storm dies down, they survive, and feel probably some gratitude for being alive. Now, I'm thinking here that most people focus on Jonah in the story, but let us think for a moment about those people who are in the boat with him. The boat's an analogy for a situation that contains more than one person. For example, a family, a work department, or an office. Now, let's say that there's someone in the family. So in the office, or in the family, let's say there's one person who is running away from a situation in their life, right? And they're creating havoc for everybody else. I've been in such a situation where the head of the office was way out of their depth and their personal life was a chaos, and they were creating enormous problems for everyone around them. When this became clear, well, now we didn't throw the boss out the window or anything like that, but a situation happened that took that person out of the office and into another place. And I can tell you, we all breathed a whole lot easier and felt a lot of gratitude for the absence of that person's storm in the middle of our lives. Jonah, meanwhile, lands in the water and is swallowed by that whale or large fish. I suspect in that moment he's not feeling so grateful. In fact, he's probably quite terrified. I would be. But he's not dead. Something to be grateful for. But he's stuck in a place that is understandably uncomfortable. So here he is, stuck but saved, alive, alone, and nothing to do but face his situation. So what do you do when these stuck situations happen? The places in your life where you'd rather not be. Hard places. Places where you feel angry, frustrated, feel sorry for yourself. You want to lash out and blame somebody for the situation. Blame God, blame the world, blame the system. And resist, defy, and at the bottom of it all, if you're honest, you'll know you're scared. As a religious people, how do we respond when we are far from gratitude and far from accepting the situation that we're in? So just take one short moment here to explain what I mean by religious in this context. You know, I believe that religion is how we know the world. Religion is a knowing or gnosis, knowledge. It's the lens through which we know in the deepest way possible, in our bodies, in our hearts, the world that we live in. How we know the world, how we make meaning of our experience of the world, for me, is through experience. In our Unitarian tradition, there have been times when there were two ways of making meaning from our lives. There was the way of the intellect and the way of experience. And I come from the tradition of Schleiermacher and Emerson. That's the tradition of experience. Schleiermacher was a German philosopher from the mid-1700s to the mid-1800s. And he said, at a point in history, when these two ways of knowing the world were distinct and separate, and even at war with each other, that religion could only be known and trusted when it had been tested by the reality of human experience. Emerson, an American theologian and essayist from the mid-1800s, said essentially the same thing. He said, get out of the churches and into nature and experience the divine firsthand. The holy is accessible to you right now. You don't need anybody telling you the way it is. So Schleiermacher and Emerson are my religious heritage or lineage. I stand in line with the theologians and the philosophers who put their religious emphasis on human experience. It's human experience passed through the fire of reason and reflection that I rely on, that I trust in, to know in the deepest way possible the holy and the whole of our world. So I return to Jonah now, and being stuck in that belly of the whale. How can we, as religious people, approach this situation? How do we respond when we are far from gratitude and acceptance of our situation? Well, number one, we got to stop and breathe. That's why I say that earlier on in the meditation. Because we need to take time to pay attention to the experience that we're having. It seems simple and straightforward. Meditators will tell you that in our present moment is actually a challenge to be in. Because our minds, they want to worry about the future. They want to hang on to the past. And we get caught up in a great complicated ball of worry and guilt and shame and confusion, etc. Number two. Once you've stopped, taken that breath, you're ready to contemplate or discern or reflect on that present situation. Now, Jonah was forced by a particularly unique circumstance to do this reflection. It took him 3 days and 3 nights to get over his fear and his frustration and his anger, his resistance, and to finally get to a place where he could begin to think clearly about his life situation. Often this is what we need, and we don't give ourselves that time. Time to reflect. Now, some people do. Some people take time themselves by going on a retreat, getting away from the world. Others will maybe do that every single day. They take a walk and connect up to the world that way, or journal and write. And sometimes, like Jonah, we may end up being forced to take time to reflect on our lives by perhaps getting ill or having an accident. Not saying that that is the reason why the accident happened necessarily, but it is an opportunity. There's nothing like a broken leg to force you to slow down and reflect on your life. Now, if it were a child or one of our own children who found themselves in a place of crisis, what would we, as liberal religious people, do for them? We would not necessarily say, God has meant you to suffer because you were born to sin. Therefore, accept your suffering, etc. That's not what we do, is it? No. I suggest that we do this. Because we are loving and compassionate people, we offer them emotional support. We say, I love you. I'm here for you. Because we are practical in the world type people, we offer practical support. If they need medicine, we'll get them medicine. If they need a therapist or a friend, we'll help them get that. We make a nutritious meal for them or help them clean up their rooms. Because we are hopeful people, we offer them hope. We'll say, perhaps it'll get better. You'll find a way. I believe in you. Because we are thinking, learning people, we would offer to help them explore and learn from their situation, knowing that self-knowledge is a powerful tool for living an aware life. And because we believe that every person has worth, we would reinforce their ability, their inner strength to see clearly and understand their situation. And finally, because we know and respect the integrity of the individual to respond to their world from their own wisdom, we would support their choice on how they would move forward. When a friend or a parent does this for a child, the child feels loved, and that love opens their heart and often is expressed with gratitude. We can also follow these steps for ourselves or an adult friend or family member. When Jonah spent those 3 days in the whale's belly with only God to talk to, or so the story goes, he did have that chance to calm down and move through the fear of what he had been asked to do. And he got to that place of all rightness, of acceptance. And from acceptance, he got to gratitude for his situation. When he saw clearly, he became grateful for the storm and for the sailors who threw him overboard and for even the whale swallowing him. He saw how everything that had happened to him had a purpose that everything that happened to him had supported his life journey. Gratitude is a wonderful thing. It is life-giving, life-renewing. Being grateful, though, is not something that you can force. The fastest way I know to feel less gratitude is being told that I should be grateful for something. Okay. I just go to resistance right away. Yeah. Now, sometimes we can be surprised by gratitude, which is a kind of grace. You know, that inexplicable, unexpected moment when you see, feel, know that it's really an extraordinarily beautiful and amazing world. No one can force anyone to feel gratitude, but you can cultivate gratitude. Regardless of our circumstances, practicing gratitude on a daily basis is an excellent spiritual practice. I'd like us to, if you're willing, to practice a little gratitude right now. It's a very private thing. Nobody's going to know what you do. I want you to think about somebody in this room. Don't look at them. Somebody in this community. I want you to see them in your mind's eye, in your imagination. See them standing or sitting in front of you and see them smiling at you. And in your imagination, smile back at them. And from your heart to their heart, whisper to them, thank you. And I thank you. When carried from one heart to another, those simple words, thank you, can transform you. They can transform the other person who receives them. They can actually transform the whole community and the world. May gratitude be your spiritual practice. From my heart to your heart, thank you.